Welcome to the AA Grapevine, the April 2024 edition. I'll be starting with the front page and going throughout the magazine. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona. The first article, Black and Blue and Yellow, by Judith N. of Marysville, Washington. Celebrating 50 years of sobriety, she took down her book and marveled at the mark she made that mattered most. It was my 50th AA anniversary month and time for a good annual house cleaning. So I got down my original big book, a sixth printing of the second edition, to reminisce. I was struck by the fact that there were few highlighted sections throughout its 164 pages. Just some pencil, black pen, blue highlighter, and blue pen underlines. The big books I see in meetings today seem full of highlights everywhere. I sat down and paged through my book and was intrigued to see the notations I had made. I immediately recalled where my first underline was. It was marked in faint pencil, perhaps as if I wasn't sure the statement pertained to me. You know the one at the beginning of the chapter more about alcoholism, about how the delusion that I was like other people had to be smashed. I then went to look for the black pen underlines, recalling that tough second year of sobriety when I toiled with the third step and my disintegrating atheism. In that same chapter, the book suggested that failure was sure to happen if I didn't enlarge my spiritual life. And in We Agnostics, the book begged me not to let any prejudice against spiritual terms keep me from AA's spiritual tools. The black underlines in my old fragile book brought me to tears. Mementos of the struggle in those early years to stay sober and become teachable. Now it was on to my blue highlights. Boy, they sure brought back those early hopeful years of discovering new faith and doing those house cleaning steps and learning to do a 10th step every night, even while steps 6, 7, 8, and 9 were ongoing. My highlighted passages in How It Works reminded me that I must be rid of selfishness above all else. I even singled out a phrase that's still a vital part of my angry mind's mantra today. The grouch and the brainstorm are the dubious luxury of normal men. I had also marked the sentence, "We avoid retaliation or argument." And on the last page of a vision for you, a single blue highlight stands out. The answers will come if your own house is in order. As I reviewed my old book, I became light-hearted. I then sought out my blue pen underlines, knowing that they were made later when I began walking with my new God, sponsoring women as sick as I had been, and hoping to be able to repay what I had been given. My underlines told me that faith had to be accompanied by self-sacrifice. The blue pen marked phrase I saw in working with others, I hope to take to my grave. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. And finally, one blue pen mark in a vision for you underlines two words, which I finally came to understand and have since attempted to fulfill in my life. Today, I'm making a commitment by marking them again with a new yellow highlighter. Abandon yourself. That's the end of that story. Old Faithful is next, by Tammy E. of Utica, New York. This is all from the Happy Birthday Big Book special section. The book that just collected dust for months one day became the most important thing in my life. I first started attending AA in 1997. One of my meetings held a weekly raffle. I never win raffles, and as expected, I didn't. But the member who did won a softcover big book. Right away, he walked over and set the prize down in front of me. He mumbled something about already having one, so I was welcome to it. I remember feeling a little embarrassed, but I mumbled back a meek thank you. I took it home, put it on my nightstand, where it sat unopened for several months. I struggled and drank off and on, sometimes even before meetings and often after leaving. Sometimes when not drinking, I would reluctantly pick up the book and try to read it. The chapters in the front made no sense to my clouded mind, but I did occasionally identify with the stories in the back. After 14 agonizing months of riding the revolving door in and out of the rooms, I decided a rehab might be the answer. I made the necessary arrangements, packed a bag, and tossed in that big book on my nightstand. During the admission process, I was offered a hardcover big book, which I promptly turned down. I needed them to know I knew what I was doing. I already had one of those books, proudly showing off my clearly unread copy. 2 weeks later, I left that rehab with my mostly still unread book. It went back home to its place on my nightstand. I struggled with drinking for a few more months until my bottom drove me to despair and I became willing to take suggestions. But the book still remained on my nightstand unread. I worked the steps with a sponsor, not sure how without cracking the book, and she lovingly guided me on my journey. I don't recall her telling me to read the book, but looking back, I'm more inclined to believe I just ignored her directive. Around the 2-year mark, I began to fall into despair once again, although I did not pick up a drink. I truly think if I hadn't stumbled across a big book study on tape, I very well may have picked up. The tape was recorded by a couple of recovered drunks. Suddenly, my interest was sparked, and I followed along in my book, and a whole new world opened up for me. I worked the steps again with a new sponsor and began carrying that book with me everywhere. When struggles confronted me throughout the day, I'd open the book at random and start reading. No matter what my issue, I seemed to find comfort and solace. Often the answer was right there in black and white. Soon, I began sponsoring other women with a whole new outlook on my sobriety. I'd meet with a sponsee once a week to read out of the book together. I felt like I was working the steps all over again. I began filling my book with little notes. I wrote all over the margins. I inserted little post-it notes and pasted things on the front and back covers. All meaningful things I had heard or read. A new level of peace and serenity entered my life. Over time, my softcover big book began to show wear and tear. I purchased a leather cover for it in hopes of preserving it. Whole sections began to separate from the binding and fall out and scatter. I began keeping Old Faithful together with rubber bands until I finally had to retire it. By then, the fourth edition was available, and I wrestled with the idea of replacing it with a sturdier hardcover version. I purchased a new book and began transferring the more meaningful notes to it. For quite some time, it didn't seem the same. But not wanting to do any more damage, I placed Old Faithful on the nightstand where it lives. Old Faithful only comes out now if I'm asked to share my story. I take her along to demonstrate how she falls apart, so I don't have to. She continues to be a comfort each night as I lay my head on my pillow, give her a grateful smile, and thank God for another day sober. Moving on to the next story, which is entitled Stolen Gem by Josh B. of Charlotte, North Carolina. Practically the only thing I did right in my first 10 years of attending AA was to keep coming back. Most times I had nowhere else to go, but AA was always glad to see me. During one of those periods where I was back to running the show, I stopped for a late night dinner after the last call at a local bar. Hungry or not, I usually went to eat for fear of going home alone or in hopes of finding someone I could keep drinking with. That night, I failed at finding company. I meandered toward my car, but as I approached, the police officer working security spoke out saying, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." He had seen my big book lying on the passenger seat, as it always did. I kept it there as a gentle reminder of what my life could be. He suggested I sleep it off and pick up a white chip tomorrow. This is just one of the times the Big Book of AA has saved my life. It would take me several more years of pain and consequences, along with a stack of white chips, to finally attain the willingness to stay sober. These days, my big book rides with me everywhere I go. It's tattered, coffee-stained, and well-used. Inside the cover, it reads, "Please do not remove this book." It came from one of the many halfway houses and detoxes I visited along the way. I often joke with people that it's the most valuable thing I've ever stolen. Today, I continue to make living amends by sharing with others the miracle of recovery and the kit of spiritual tools found within this book. I'm grateful that officer saw an opportunity to offer grace that night. I continue, as our book says, to cling to the thought that, in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. And that is my experience. The next story is All in the Family by Betsy C. of Centerville, Maryland. The big books that once helped her parents now hold a most special place on her shelf. I grew up in a home with alcoholic parents. Luckily, they both found the rooms of AA in the late 60s when I was a teenager. I wasn't introduced to the big book yet, but boy, I sure heard the slogans at the dinner table. As the years went on, I learned that they were reading the big book with others as they shared the program. My parents had many sponsees filtering into the house on a weekly basis to delve into the program through the book. I'm grateful that my parents served as a program of attraction as I came into the room several years later and began my own journey with the big book. My mother was thrilled to be able to share the program with me. In our frequent conversations, I heard her wisdom through the references to many passages. "We are in the world to play the role He assigns," it says in chapters about step 4 in the big book. She would explain that at times she was a wife, a caretaker when my dad was ill, a grandmother taking care of her sick granddaughter, and a sponsor. These were roles that she might not have always enjoyed, but she had acceptance that they were what was in front of her to do. One day I was looking for a topic to lead a meeting and asked her for a good one. She suggested, "Do you want to be a 52 or an 83?" I hadn't heard of this comparison before. We referred to page numbers in the book. She explained that in the middle of we agnostics, there are the explanations of our human problems. This was the before. Later in the chapter, Into Action, the ninth step promises can be found, which are the result of working the first nine steps. This is the after. Do we want to live in the human problems, or do we want to work the steps and get the results as described in the promises? A passage in Working with Others was my mother's all-time favorite. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. She emphasized the last phrase, no matter what your circumstances, explaining that whoever we are and whatever is going on, turning it over can bring us serenity and remarkable events. During the last weeks of my mother's life in her 49th year of sobriety, her sponsees were still visiting her to read the big book together. I was very grateful to see these women that I had known for many years continue their sobriety journeys with her to the end. Today, I have 7 or 8 big books on my shelf. One is my dad's with his handwriting in the margins. 3 are my mother's with the comments, underlined sentences, and pages falling out. I use these books as my main source of AA literature, seeing my parents' handwriting and the words of wisdom keeps them alive, not only in my heart, but in my program. And that's the end of that story. Next, Healing Words by Mary R. of Snellville, Georgia. This nurse thought she was too smart for AA, but after reading the book, she found her match. I know it's hard to understand when we're talking about working the steps, the note read. Maybe this book will help. Call me if you would like to talk to someone. I was sitting in an AA meeting reading a handwritten message on the front page of a big, serious-looking blue book that had been passed down the road to me. Next to the message was a woman's name and phone number. I looked up and saw the people sitting near me smiling. A woman close to my age met my eye and nodded. After the meeting, she came up to me and we talked for a moment, not for long. I think she could tell I wasn't feeling well. I had been going to AA meetings for a week and I had had a bad morning. I came to the meeting from my psychiatrist's office, the one who had sent me to AA the week before, saying, "You may very well be depressed, but we won't be able to tell till after you get sober. You need to start going to AA, and there's a meeting right near here at noon." The doctor had told me to go to a meeting every day and come back in a week. I was the one who asked her for the medicine to help me detox. I'm a nurse. I knew how bad detox could feel. That my doctor would send me to AA had come as a mild surprise. I don't know why I was surprised, considering all the years I had tried so hard to stop drinking on my own without ever pulling it off. I was a very smart woman, after all, who didn't need help. I was able to graduate from nursing school and make a career despite a drinking habit that impressed all the drunks at the dive bars I went to. But I went to AA that week. I let it sink in deep within me. I was numb inside, unable to argue. One day, I couldn't find the noon meeting, so I called my husband at work. Somehow, he didn't seem surprised by my news and said he'd drive me to a meeting that night. That afternoon, I sat at home and gulped about half of the detox meds. I was in a blackout at the meeting, but I must have heard something. I woke up the next morning and my first thought came on its own. I'm going to do it their way. I didn't recognize that small miracle at the time. As far as the detox pills went, I regulated what was left in my usual intelligent way. I was an old hand at this. Somehow it even seemed okay to casually mention to my doctor what I had done with the pills. To my horror, all hell broke loose. The doctor said I was a relapse waiting to happen and needed to go to treatment immediately. A woman who ran an outpatient program in the town had an office nearby, and the doctor called her in to talk to me. "Don't you know this is the most serious thing you'll ever do?" they asked me. "I am serious," I squeaked. But then, between the two of them, they shared a look. As a nurse, I knew that look well. Something in the bottom of my heart died a little. I didn't want my boss to know. I managed to convince them to hold off on treatment. I swore I'd go to an AA meeting every day. There were no warm smiles as I left the office, and that's how I entered the AA meeting that afternoon. After the meeting, I headed home to wait alone for my husband in our apartment. I was almost in a panic. Maybe I should just put myself in treatment and get it over with. Then I remembered that big blue book the woman gave me. I could read some of it first and then decide what to do. I sat down and read it until my husband came home. As I read, under all my numbness, I started to feel a small sense of wonder. The book wasn't dull, preachy, or angry. It calmly presented ideas for me to consider, ideas that involve life and death even. There was no judgment, no scolding. If a specific example didn't work, the book said, consider another one. And if this is too much to consider, cheer up. At least half of us felt this way at first. I had never read anything like it before. One paragraph stood out for me that day. It was from Bill Story, that cocky know-it-all guy who was just like me. And there he was in his story in a whole lot of trouble, just like me. He wrote this beautiful paragraph. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my requests bore upon my usefulness to others. And then might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. I repeated these words back to myself, God consciousness, to sit quietly when in doubt, usefulness to others. Maybe if I worked really hard and kept my head down and didn't let those AA people know what a jerk I was, this could happen for me too someday. Ever since then, I've kept reading and rereading. The language in the book isn't a problem to me anymore because over 35 years, I've come to love and I hope live the simple ideas the book expresses so well. When I find my job stressful today, I read a story from the back of the book after work. I've been through two editions now. The people in the stories became friends to me, and I look forward to meeting new friends in the next edition. My sponsor doesn't have to remind me to read anymore, although she can still point out parts that are helpful when I seem to need them. I even appreciate it most of the time. That's the end of that story and the end of part one of the April edition of the AA Grapevine. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster coming to you from member-supported Sun Sounds of Arizona. Part two will be continued in the next section.